Good evening. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, July 20th, 2008. It's now about 8:03 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio. It is time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Let me hear from you tonight. Tonight, we open mic night. There'll be several subjects we'll be talking about. Our main topic will be choice equals liberty. We're going to be talking about that once again. I also would like right now to encourage you to go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. Folks, I am reading up on this. I keep very close track of this. If you are not preparing yourself for an economic turndown, and when I say economic turndown, I'm talking about something very nasty very, very soon. You may be surprised, and we don't want our listeners to be surprised. We want them to be prepared. I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Also, we have another icon that you can click on, and the little map, it pins where you're calling from. It doesn't have your name on or anything like that, so we know where our callers are calling from. I'd like to first read a couple of emails I received, and I said, this is from Joey. Hi, Joey. And he said, I listened to your show on gas prices and loved it. Your passion is great, as well as your knowledge and historical perspective. Well, thank you very much. And he does recommend a Dr. Michael Edelstein can be contacted regarding, you know, coming on my show. He says, and he'd like to refer me. He says, congratulations. And he says, oh, by the way, he does mention, and he knew something that I just learned. I've received a call from RBN Network. That's Revolution Broadcasting Network. And they are interested in, I guess, hosting or carrying our show on their network, which would increase our listenership just tremendously. I'm really excited about that. This is a tremendous opportunity. As you know, folks, there have been so many times that I have said, I think I'm giving this up. This is much too much work. I can't handle this anymore. I'm not getting paid for it. Sunday night is not a very good time, but it's the only time that I have available to broadcast. And it's very difficult. It's the end of the week, and I like to do nothing about this time of night. And here I have to gear up all over again, like it's the beginning of the week, to do a broadcast. And I do it because this is something that I think needs to be done. This is an educational broadcast. We want to talk about liberty, what it means to you, to make people understand what liberty really means. This is not lip service. This is not a talk show program, as you would see, like the conservatives and liberals have, where they just sit and they talk, oh yeah, Bob, I agree with you, shit, nope, those guys, and all that stuff. We want to learn something here, and I want to learn from you as well. So I do encourage you to call in 646-652-4620. I have another email here from Jasper. He said, I've been a listener of your show for some time. I'd call in. He said, fortunately, I can't make any long-distance calls from where he is. Regardless, email works just as well. He said, he has some questions for me. He says, so Bush gave the nod for drilling, and we await on Congress. I recall you saying that you weren't in an energy crisis. And so he says, one, do you support domestic drilling? Two, what are some of the positives and negatives of expanding or our production of other energy sources, such as coal mining, nuclear, etc.? And which of these three energy sources do you think America should pursue and why? Jasper, thank you very much for email. Let me put this aside. I will answer it henceforth, right after I finish reading the emails. We will get back to that one. Here's one from Paul. This was an interesting one. It says, I've been on vacation to where government corruption of the 20th century started. That would be none other than Jekyll Island, Georgia. That is fantastic. Oh, geez, Jekyll Island. That's where the Federal Reserve was, the secret meeting concocting the Federal Reserve was in Jekyll Island. It's actually a resort and a tourist place now. It's a nice getaway from Atlanta with minimal crowds and plenty to do without overdoing it. While there, I would ride my bike all over the island, and while doing so, a few folks noticed my Liberty Talk Radio t-shirt. Thanks again, he says. And took note of the web addresses. They were eager to listen to me talk about libertarian philosophy and how libertarianism is the change we need right now, using the price of the gas pump as a visual aid and reminder. That gets them every time, and they'll all be hungry for change. Well, that is really super great. He said, I also able to plug, have put a plug in for Bob Barr campaign. And he says Bob Barr lives in his county, and he has come a long way since ditching the Republican Party. He'll be a great president. Thank you very much, Paul. I really appreciate that. And Paul, if your t-shirt ever wears out, please send me email. I will send you a replacement immediately. Keep biking with that t-shirt on. That is terrific. Well, folks, there are several subjects that I would love to touch on this evening. And remember, we are going to talk about the energy crisis because we have email, and I always promise my listeners I will, in fact, answer. Oh, let me mention also that come this next Sunday, we will have Wayne Allen Root, my man, Wayne Allen Root, as our guest. Now, many of you know he is the vice president candidate for president of the United States on the Libertarian Party. He's running with Bob Barr, and he is the most energetic guy in the world. He is unbelievable. I think he takes like 100 vitamin pills a day. He must, because his energy level trumps mind 40-fold. He's a great guy, and I'm really interested. Now, I'm not going to be easy with him, although I do know him. I've met him on a couple occasions. We've had a good time together. And he's been on this show before. I'm not going to make it easy for him because I have some really tough questions for him. So I do suggest everyone tune in. Okay. I have several little subjects to talk about first before we get into the main subject. I had an opportunity to let me preface this by saying, understand this is an educational program, so if I digress, that's okay, provided there's a lesson in it for you and for me. Now, I bare my soul to my audience because I'm telling you my experiences, my mistakes, what I had done, and what I should have done. And this is one of those I should have done. I was at a little pool party that I was invited to. And we just sat around. I very rarely go to those things. I'll be very honest with you. I'm a kind of a homebody, and I don't do those things too often. But there's a good friend of mine. He says, why don't you just join my wife and I, and we'll just sit around and have some. It was a luau type thing. It was a great food. So we went. It was very, very nice. We had a very nice time. What he invited, of course, there were other people there that belonged to that pool club. And it was a neighborhood pool club. It was very nicely done. And we were just talking about just subjects, and have no idea how we got on this subject, but this guy is politically, you know, savvy, and he likes to talk about this stuff, and we were just talking about certain political things. And there's the subject of us bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and we bombed civilian targets. Oh, I think that we're talking about first about, you know, Iran, and they have nuclear weapons and all that, and, you know, they can be dangerous. And someone mentioned, well, you know, we're the only ones that have ever bombed, you know, civilian targets. And he mentioned, you know, all's fair in love and war type thing. He says, you know, the Japanese, you know, bombed a lot of civilian areas, you know, in China and everywhere. And, of course, you know, well, Pearl Harbor was a military base. But and he says, you know, war is war, hell is hell, you know, war is hell, and that's the way it goes, you know, you can't make excuses for that. And I didn't want to get in an argument with the guy because I didn't know him, and here I'm a guest, and I don't want to start this debate with this guy. But I said, and all I said was, you know, we, it just seems to me, by, you know, that paradigm we have of you know, you bomb, you know, our neighborhoods, will, you know, will bomb yours, is that two wrongs are trying to make a right here. And it just doesn't seem right to me that we, you know, we should keep military to military regardless. And he says, well, that's not war. And he said, that's the way it's always been, and blah, 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 blah. And I kept my mouth shut. And I almost regret, now I do regret keeping my mouth shut, because I want people to think about that. I really want my listeners to think about that, because they're going to engage in conversations, and this will be brought up from time to time. You know, they can say, well, the Germans, you know, sent those rockets over, and they sent the Luftwaffe over, and they bombed, you know, Britain, you know, to demoralize the troops and demoralize the people of Britain and whatever. And so we went back and we did the same thing, where we were dropping bombs from thousands of feet up in the air and just on people, just on people. Now, you know, when Stalin made an excellent comment, of course, when he was alive, and he said, you know, when one person dies, it's a tragedy. You know, when, you know, many people die, it's a statistic. And he was very right. And this really comes to mind, because here he's saying that, well, you know, it's okay because it's war. Now, this is the way I should have answered him. And this is what I want you to think about if you're ever engaged in a conversation like this. I should have asked him, well, if I gave you, or if your commanding officer gave you a gun, or guns, you know, M16 or whatever, and asked you to walk into a room, and huddled on the floor in that room were old men, grandfathers, little old ladies, mothers huddling their children, and infants. And your commanding officer said, you know, they're the enemy. Now, let me back up for a second. The people, the population of countries are not the enemy. And they never have been. Countries have gone to war, and if you ask the entire populace, do you really want to go to war? Do you have anything against you? And they'd say no. I mean, the people with the power use the people and use the resources of the people, their lives, to go to war for their own selfish means. So it's not the people. Understand that. All right, so let me, that is a backdrop. So here you have these innocent people, frightened for their lives. Now your commanding officer has asked you, shoot them all. Now, they're not spies, they're not soldiers, they're not the Taliban, they're not terrorists. They just happen to be the nationality of the country you are fighting. And let's say in this case they were Japanese. What I should have said, would you go there and pull the trigger on the babies? On the grandmothers. Now, just think of that question for a second. What if he would have said, well, yes, my commanding officer said I should do it, I do it. Well, then all bets are off. Conversation is ended. This is one person I don't want to know. You, I'm sure, don't want to know. Just think about that. Think about when all of a sudden you make it personal. You have a gun in your hand, you're going to go in, and you're going to put a bullet right into an infant's body, blow it apart, with its mother there watching. Would you do it? No. But if he was flying an airplane, and he was given coordinates, and he knew those coordinates were civilian targets, and they know they're civilian, and he was asked to drop a bomb, he would probably do it. You know, that raises so many ethical questions. So many. And it actually goes to the root of war itself, of the legitimacy of war itself. You know, it is really one thing if we're on the shores you're at the shores of your own country, and for no reason whatsoever, an invading force comes over. Well, everyone just fires like crazy, and hopefully they'll live through the ordeal. You know, those are the exceptions, aren't they? But then you have things where we fought in Vietnam and we took our planes and we just defoliated and bombed. Millions and millions of people died. I mean, we really have to think about how brutal that is, how unethical and immoral. I don't care what religion you are or lack of religion you are. That's wrong. Now, my mistake was not asking that question. Now, let me be perfectly honest with you. I did not think of that until minutes after that conversation was over. Because if I would have thought of asking that question that way, I would have done so. It is immoral to kill innocent people just because they happen to be there. They happen to be maybe that nationality, or they happen to be working there at the time in that country while you're bombing it. Think of the travesty. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. I was quite disappointed in myself that I didn't think fast enough. I was more concerned about keeping peace and harmony around the table because I was only a guest. And you see, we really don't have a choice about war because we don't make war. I asked friends of mine, or people that I know who are the neocons, I said, who in Iraq do you hate? Well, the Taliban, the this, they have no idea who they're talking about. The Al-Qaeda, the terrorists. I said, can you name them? No, but they're all over the place. I don't know. I want to know specifically who you hate there. They can't answer that. You see, they don't really hate anybody. I don't hate anybody there. But we're fighting a war, you know, so, you know, whatever is, just like this other fellow said. This guy was a smart guy, really intelligent guy. What happens? What happens? It's what I said last week, something that really, really bothers me. In war, you lose your choice. You put on a uniform, you do what you're told. You tell them, kill, kill. You don't ask any questions. You're the one that has to go home and live with that for the rest of your life. And how many soldiers do? Because they didn't have a choice. Now, if you're there and you're protecting your family, and there are people invading your neighborhood, and they're just animals. I mean, they're just going to take everything over. They're crazy, you know. And you shoot somebody, you may feel horrible about shooting somebody, but it probably won't disturb you for the rest of your life. It may not even bother you if you feel that you did the right thing. But when you go over someplace and you start killing people indiscriminately and you come back, you're never the same. You see, you had no choice. You lose your liberty when you are drafted in the army or when you sign up and you agree. And here's what bothers me, and I know I'm digressing, but this is what bothers me, is when people say, well, he's a brave soldier, he's fighting for his country, he's fighting for our freedom. He's fighting for America. Think about that. These wars are fought not for the freedom of the people. These wars are fought to protect the financial organizations that own everything. We go to war. We went to war, in my opinion, in Iraq and Iraq, because Saddam Hussein refused to take U.S. dollars for his oil. We may go to war with Iran because Iran has now created an exchange refusing to accept U.S. dollars for their oil. It has to do with protecting the bankers. Our boys go over there and they die to protect the bankers. It has nothing to do with our freedom. It has nothing to do with America. It has nothing to do with the freedom of the people. That's my opinion. And I think it's a travesty. I think the whole thing is a travesty. There's no reason for us to be at war with anyone. As Ron Paul said, we don't have enemies, but boy, we do a damn good job of making enemies. So when we go to war, it's the ultimate lack of choice, the ultimate lack of freedom. And let's consider the types of wars. You know, we say war, we think the war in Iraq. Why don't we think about the war on drugs? There's another war, right? Another war where we lose our freedom, where if someone is caught with one piece of marijuana on them, they may get 10 years in jail. I mean, losing their freedom forever. Big deal. Victimless crime. Do you know our jails are replete with people who have committed victimless crimes because they may have had a joint on them because of the war on drugs? How many violations of private property, of privacy, were perpetrated because of the war on drugs? And how about the war on terror? The Military Commissions Act, the Patriot Act, and a host of other things, and they're getting meaner and meaner and meaner. All for your protection, by the way, so that you can enjoy the freedom here in the United States. You know, war takes away our freedom. And we have war. How about there's one war that we never talk about? We don't talk about it in full, and not in this context at least. How about the war on poverty? You ever think of that? Here, I read an article by the founder of the Future Freedom Foundation. And let me get his name. I know him, and yet I can't think of... where is he? Nope, I lost him, and I can't just think of his name for a second. But anyway, so I'm not plagiarizing. I wanted you to know that. But he wrote an interesting article on how the war on poverty actually... it reduces your freedom. And think about it. The government declares war on poverty, which means they put in programs of giving people money. We don't know who these people are. We don't really know if they're deserving, but they just give people money. That money comes from you. In other words, the government takes money away from you to give to somebody else. When the government takes money away from you to give it to somebody else, that, in fact, restricts your freedom. The government really hasn't waged war on poverty, folks. The government has waged war on the individual, on the citizen of this country. Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host of Liberty Talk Radio. Right now, we have no callers. We have five open lines, 646-652-4620. Please call in with a question, 646-652-4620. Even if you want to disagree with me and argue with me, it's okay. I will not argue back. I'll try to make heads or tails out of what you're saying and see if we can come to some sort of understanding. Okay, thank you very much. Now, what about Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, Social Security, aid to dependent children, all these things, all these programs, supposedly part of the war on poverty. All that does is the government has to wage war on you to take your money away and to give it to somebody else. But we don't think of it that way. We say, oh, look, the government has these good programs. The government has any programs. These people in Washington don't give a dime to this stuff. They take it from us. And then we elect them. They wage war on us, and we re-elect them to office. Now, I really think we should think about that. And folks, if you ever did vote for anybody who's voted for any of these wars on poverty, on drugs, and whatever, you should really think about that. It's interesting. It's interesting the way we actually create our own problem. We endorse then these wars on poverty, these wars on terror, this war on drugs, and all these other stupid things that we call war. I want to give an example of how we get tripped into conversations that are very difficult to get out of. A good friend of mine, who's libertarian, by the way, said, you know, our friend Larry had many foot operations. He's over 65 years old. He had an ankle operation and very severe. And he's got very severe arthritis. He's been very active all his life, and I guess he just runs in his family. He's can hardly walk. And my friend said, you know, if it wasn't for Medicare, you know, he probably would not have had those operations because he probably couldn't have afforded them. They were very expensive. And he would be worse off for it. Now, here's my answer to that. At what cost? Now, Larry, love the guy, you know, and the whole bit. But when you look at what the government programs have done to our healthcare industry, they resulted in everything being too expensive, where everyone cannot afford it, you know. And instead of saying, let's get the government out so people could afford to buy their own insurance so they can have this stuff done, you know, and you know, participate in it, but not go bankrupt, but do what can't afford it. We allow the government to do it, which makes it a lot more expensive, you know. And at what cost? And when I say what cost, I mean the Medicare is billions and billions of dollars in the hole. In other words, we're going to eventually bankrupt the entire nation just to support Medicare. But what we see a local thing. We see just Larry, good old Larry, and hell of a nice guy, Larry, get his operation on his foot. So we say, well, the program's got to be okay. The program's got to be okay because good old Larry got his knee operation or his ankle operation. So I guess it's okay. It reminds me when a shoe factory closes down in the north central part of the United States, and of course all the TV crews go there, the network stations go there, and they interview the people. Oh yeah, my father, grandfather worked in the shoe factory back in 1825, all this other stuff. You know, my father worked here and I worked here, and now I'm out of a job and I have no place to go, and you know, 325 people losing their jobs. You know, we should do something about this. And so when we see this one local thing, like Larry's a local thing where we see him being helped with his ankle. This is a very local thing where we see a factory going down and everyone in that town is affected by it. But what we don't see is a result of them not making the shoes in the stores, now that they're being made, let's say, in China, instead of being $79 a pair, they're $39 a pair. So I say, keeping that factory open, at what cost? Now, there are a lot of things I buy because they're so incredibly affordable, and I buy them, and that helps stimulate the economy. If those products were made here in the United States, I would not buy them. In fact, I have a printer sitting right there. I'll tell you what it is. It's an ML2010 Samsung laser printer, and I bought it. I forgot the price, but it was so incredibly cheap. I said, this thing will never work. It was just practically, they almost gave it to me. And I said, even if it didn't work, it was worth trying. That's how good the price was. It's been the best printer I've ever had. It's fast, it's clear, it's inexpensive to run. It has a print saver on it. It's fabulous. I've had it now for 3 years. Never faulted. Now, had that printer been made in the United States, and it would have been, I'll tell you, three times the price, maybe four times the price, I wouldn't have given it a second look. I would have been worse off for it. I would have had some cruddy printer here, slow printer, or I would have had a printer that would have cost me three or four times as much, which is money out of my pocket, that basically I used to buy other things, including making donations to charity. So I say, at what cost? You see, once the government starts taking our money away, we lose our choice. Once we lose our choice, we lose our liberty. You must understand that the loss of choice, the restrictions on choice, reduces our liberty. We should be absolutely free to buy whatever printer we want, and then with the money left over, if we have any, we should be free to do whatever we want with that money. The government should only be entitled to that amount of money to make itself run in its minimalist role, all right? I'll say that again, of protecting the freedom and the rights, the freedoms and the liberty of the individual. In other words, maintaining a rule of law. It's a court system. Make sure our judicial system is honest and straight. And that's it. And I've often said the easiest job in the world. If I had to take the easiest job in the world, it would be President of the United States. People say how stupid that is. How incredibly stupid that is. I mean, that's got to be the most difficult, easiest job in the world. The President of the United States looks at the Constitution. Someone comes in and says, hey, Mr. President, looks like this country is not playing ball with us, so we've got to put an embargo on them. And he goes to the Constitution. He looks up E for embargo. Sorry, nothing in here about the constitutionally that we can embargo any country. So I guess that's that. Have a nice day. Next guy comes in. Well, looks like, you know, that country, you know, is looking for a lot more money from us and loans, or else they're not going to play ball. Oh, you mean giving money to other countries? So let's look up that in the Constitution. Giving money to other countries. Sorry, not there. Sorry, have a nice day. I mean, you can take about everything that our president gets involved in today with his massive staff in cabinet and say they should all be done away with. It's not in the Constitution. They're not entitled to do it. They weren't ever intended to do it. In fact, our first few presidents, they used to sit on the front lawn. They had nothing to do. They sit on the front lawn. They had a rocking, you know, they sat on the front lawn. People used to come by, sit down, chat with them. And that's the way it was supposed to be. And America grew to be the most fruitful, productive nation in the world. You ever think of that? Unbelievable. What about preemptive strike in war? Well, Mr. President, should we bomb the bombs? You know, should we bomb the hell out of them? Let me check. Bomb the hell out of them. Bomb, be on the bees. Must be on the bees. Bomb. Nope, nothing in the Constitution. Sorry, can't bomb. Have a nice day. Oh, by the way, I made 3 decisions today. I think I'm going to lunch. May take an afternoon nap. May not return to office. See you tomorrow. President of the United States is the easiest job in the world. Easiest, absolute easiest job in the world. And when it comes to choice, I'd like to know who is making the choice. When the government has a program, who is making the choice for the people? The people aren't making the choice. The government is making the choice for the people. If they're handing out money, and what if they give money to a person who doesn't deserve it? Not that anyone deserves your money. You deserve your money. No one else deserves your money. No one, no matter how needy they are. But let's talk less needy. How do you know how needy they are? You know people in food stamps. You see them smoking cigarettes, buying steaks and all sorts of that. And then they use the food stamps to buy the milk. Come on, folks. And who determines what choices need to be made? Unbelievable. I'm going to get off that for a second. I want to get on the choice of immigration. Immigration, really my favorite subject. Coming here is a choice. Employers have a right to invite people to work here from anywhere. That's their choice. It's an agreement between that person and the company. I don't know what the government has to do with it. That's freedom of choice. When you have immigration policy, you take that choice away. And it serves absolutely no purpose at all. Folks, this is Joe Cristiano, the host of Liberty Talk Radio. Our number is 646-652-4620. Please call in. I'd love to hear your questions, your comments, even your arguments. 646-652-4620. If you are listening to this on a rebroadcast or on during our archives, you can always send your email to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Okay, now to Jasper. Do you support domestic drilling? That's an interesting question. The whole energy crisis is something that, I mean, the volumes have been written on and by people who are just so light years ahead of me on this game. But I'll tell you what I know, and I'll give you my opinion for whatever it is worth. It is not up to me to decide whether or not we drill. If someone has the capacity to drill, they should be allowed to drill. Period. And I say, well, what about, you know, offshore and the risk and whatever? Well, who owns that land? I mean, we're talking miles out there. We're talking going down thousands of feet into the ocean floor. We say, well, we own that. Since when? We? Who's we? Well, the U.S. government. How? Well, we just made it up. We got together with other nations and we said, hey, you know, we used to be able to only drill 600 feet. That was about, you know, so many miles away from shore. Now we can go down, you know, 10,000 feet. That's what, you know, let's change the 3-mile limit to 20 miles, or whatever the case may be. It's an arbitrary number that people get up and go, hey, you know, we can make some money doing this thing here. You know, let's divvy up the ocean. Well, first of all, that's stupid. If someone wants to drill, let them drill. Now, should they drill responsibly? Of course. Now, do they want to drill responsibly? Of course. It cost hundreds of millions of dollars for a platform and to drill to get the first barrel out. Do you think for one moment that they want to go out there and start and drill and have the oil leak out? Just think. I mean, it leaks out. They're not getting paid for it. I mean, to me, there's a selfish motive. We have this impression that we go out there and we just, you know, just drill and have oil popping all over the place and the place being polluted like hell. That's silly. I mean, you could invest, I mean, millions upon millions upon millions in a platform. Millions to just set up there. It costs millions just to determine where to drill. And you think we're going to let 1 ounce escape? No, 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 no. We ain't that stupid. I mean, if I was out there, and first of all, if you did, even if you didn't care, and you, so we spent $120 million on a platform, $40 million, this and that, so what, a few hundred million, $1 billion, so what, you know. And it was nothing to you, which is a silly thing, you know. And you didn't care, hey, drill whichever way you want, and the oil's going all over the place. You don't think there would be a backlash? I mean, somehow someone would find a good reason to sue the heck out of you and take that whole drilling platform from you, you know, in a court of law. You know, I mean, it's so irresponsible. I mean, it's naive, not irresponsible, but it's naive to think that the people who are drilling are automatically irresponsible. They're not. They don't want to lose 1 ounce. They want it all to go up to a pipe, perfectly clean, into a ship, you know, where they can tanker it. Off it goes. They want to get paid for it. They got to make back their hundreds of millions of dollars that they have invested in it. I mean, this is big stuff. I mean, there's probably nothing in this world more expensive than an offshore platform. You think they're going to do that and say, ah, don't worry about spilling oil. Hey, have another drink, Bob. No, they have engineers over there, engineers and tests and whatever. Now, saying that, and I'm just talking from a practical point of view. You say, well, the oil companies don't care. Sure, they don't care. Oil companies don't care. Oil companies are not people. But people who are doing the job care. People who are there care that they do their job properly. And they want to see that oil come up. And they don't want a drop to come out. They want to be proud of what they do. You know, I don't know why we get this impression, because it's the oil company, they're bad, we're good. So yeah, drilling, everybody can drill as much as they want. And why not? Who's to stop them? Why should we stop them? Anwar, ridiculous. If we drill responsibly at Anwar, and we would drill responsibly at Anwar, we'd get the oil there. I think it's disingenuous for us to say it's okay for the Saudis or for the Kuwaitis or for whoever it is or for the United Arab Emirates. They can drill off their shore. They can drill on their land, you know, and then give the oil to us, hopefully very cheap, on the cheap. But, oh, we don't want to desecrate our land. You know, how disingenuous is that? You know, we have oil right here in Oklahoma. There's a place called Glenpool, and the reason why it's called Glenpool, because this guy Glenn hit oil there, you know, 100 years ago. It's called it's actually Glenn's pool of oil, and there's tons of oil there. They're not drilling, you know, because it's populated. Well, if they need the oil, They should buy the land, section it off, make it safe, and drill. You know, every single municipality has some sort of restriction on where and why people cannot drill for oil. Los Angeles County, tremendous oil reserves there. We don't drill a dime there anymore because of the people. Well, I wonder if that's really legitimate. It's all this thing, I want oil, but not in my backyard. I think we should drill wherever it is necessary, wherever we can, wherever we can safely drill. That's my answer. Now, here's my long-term take on that. If we did say, well, then we'll never become, we're addicted to oil, we'll never get off this addiction. First of all, people don't get addicted to oil, they get addicted to drugs. We're not addicted to food, we're not addicted to breathing air, and we're not addicted to oil. The word addiction is wrong. We're not addicted, but oil is something that's necessary in our modern society, like everything else, like a million other things. And we're not addicted to anything else, but we are addicted to oil, which is silly. But what would happen if we started to drill, and let's say we drilled a mile offshore, and I'm making this up, you know, no more oil, we have to go 2 miles, 10 miles offshore. As we go out, what happens? The price of oil gets a lot more expensive. As the price of oil gets a lot more expensive because it's more difficult to extract, and that's what's happening around the world. We're not drilling in Glenpool anymore, we're going to Anwar. You see what I mean? We have it right here, but we won't drill. But we won't go to Anwar. All right? So we go there, and it becomes more expensive. As it becomes more expensive, alternative sources of energy become more attractive. And this is a slow process, and we should allow that process. The regular market just take its course. Eventually, oil will phase out. And you know that if you've heard this comment 1,000 times, I'm sure you want to vomit if you hear it again. You know, the Stone Age didn't end because of a lack of stones. But new technologies came, and new technologies will come. You know, we had wood, we had coal, we had the whale oil, all this other stuff that we use. We still have those things, but new technologies came over. You know, then it became oil, natural gas, and down the road. Now, that being said, understand that only about one-third of our energy comes from oil. I mean, I'm saying just real approximately, about one-third of our energy comes from oil. One-third comes from natural gas, and one-third from coal. So we are sort of diverse in what we have here. Now, they say we are the Saudi Arabia of coal, we're the Saudi Arabia of tar sands, of oil, which is a little bit more expensive and dirtier than just extracting it out of the grounds in the sands of Saudi Arabia and shipping it over here. Now, and by the way, if we're so concerned about drilling, we should be concerned about all these tankers going across the ocean. I mean, you know, that cuts both ways. But understand that oil, we're not... Our economy is not driven solely by oil. Obviously, our transportation system relies on oil. But our industrial use is heavily reliant on coal and on natural gas because they run on electricity. So, you know, we're not using oil proportionally for all different facets of our economy. We use it in transportation, but we use proportionally less in manufacturing, proportionally less in residential. So we have to think of not only all of the sources that we have, and we have, you know, geothermal, we have hydroelectric power. Hydroelectric power is really expensive power. We think it's free because, hey, the water's there and it flows, man, free power. No, you displace millions of people to build a dam. You know, you have to buy up all this land, then you have to decimate the land, and then you got to build this gigantic generating plant and dam and whatever. And then it produces only electricity and only for a certain area. It's very restrictive and incredibly expensive, folks. Don't kid yourself. It's expensive when it comes to ecologically expensive. If you want to talk about the EPA and Greenpeace and all those people, they should be screaming at all of these dams being built. Or any dam being built. So it's not green energy whatsoever. It decimates the environment. All right, then geothermal, and that's kind of tough too. There's a lot of waste on that. Then we come to natural gas, which we're trying to explore as much as possible. And we are very big in natural gas, but we need to drill more to get it. You know, it's not a matter of cutting back. It's a matter of continuing to exploit the natural resources that we have in a responsible manner. And as it becomes more expensive, other ones naturally will come to the fore and we'll start integrating them into the marketplace without any government regulation. The important thing is absolutely no government regulation whatsoever. Because once you get the government in there saying, this is what you can do, can't do, we'll put a cap on this, so many carbon credits. Once you do that, you screw up the whole works, nothing works. Just like our financial system, it's going to collapse in a couple of months, not because of lack of regulation, because of regulation and because of how Congress has managed this whole thing. Okay? I digress again. But so he says, what are some of the positives? And the question that was asked in the email, what are some of the positives and negatives to expand or expanding, I guess, our production of other energy sources such as coal mining, etc.? Well, obviously, coal is dirty. I mean, we know that. We know coal is dirty. Now, whether or not you believe CO2 is contributing to global warming or not, it's still a very, very dirty, you know, type of process. To clean it is very, very expensive, and we're really not there yet. There is no consensus in the community that, in fact, CO2 is contributing to global warming. We know there's some sort of correlation. We know there's a correlation that's saying we have a lot more CO2 in the air, and during this time, the Earth has been getting warmer, but it's been getting warmer anyway, and we're just phasing out of an ice age, and that's just it. And the notable scientists, I mean, the majority and those notable scientists who have studied this said this global warming is such a complex issue. Everything is so inextricably intertwined. You can't take one thing and blame it and saying this thing is causing that. We really don't know. All right, we have a caller coming in here. Let's see if we can get this caller. Call your first name, where you're calling from, please.
Patricia. Patricia?
Yes, Patricia. What can I do for you today?
Well, I wonder why in our economy it seems like American people only sit by and wait for their government to do something for them, to help with whatever the issue may be. It seems like nobody has any, nobody chooses to use their own initiative to try to solve any problem. And I know one thing that would help our economy would probably be conservation of energy, gasoline, and et cetera. But people don't seem to even contemplate that anymore. Why do you think that is? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Patricia, for the great question. I thank you for calling. Appreciate that. I wish I had an answer. I'm reminded of the comments made by people during the Depression when the government wanted to give them handouts, and they said, hell no, I'll do it on my own. I'll work it out. I'm not taking money from anyone. And they did work it out, and they worked very hard at it, and they suffered a pretty long period of time. We don't take that attitude. I don't know why. I suspect it's because we've been conditioned. We've been absolutely conditioned over the years that when something happens, the government steps in. Now, how do we get conditioned? We watch television. You know, you watch television, and the first thing is, well, you know, the government should do this. The government's irresponsible, didn't act fast enough. You know, look at Katrina. Government came in and made a mess of that. And yet we had a condition like that back in 1927 when the Mississippi overflowed and a million people were displaced. There wasn't one federal dollar given to anyone. Everyone just moved out, waited for the water to recede, went back, rebuilt, no questions asked. I mean, it was a very simple thing. People took care of themselves. But I think it's television. The answer is television. Television has convinced everybody that we have to wait for the government because the government has the answers and the programs when they don't. And this is why we have a libertarian movement. We have a libertarian movement so that we can start thinking for ourselves and realize that the government is not the answer. People listen, watch TV, and are convinced. And in school, too. We have government schools telling them the government is the answer. We are subjects of the government. We have to go to government schools to be loyal to the government. Hell's bells! We are the governors. And as a result, we become slaves to the system. That's the best answer I can give you, Patricia. Thank you very much. I wish I had a better answer. It befuddles me as well. It's a real tough one. Thank you very much. Let me answer this. He says, expanding, what are the positives and negatives of expanding production of other energy sources? Well, the other energy sources, quite frankly, are insignificant. Solar is insignificant, very expensive, and is very local. Wind power, it just doesn't generate much. I mean, maybe we'll get, you know, of our total supply of energy, maybe a fraction of 1%, even if we go hog wild on the thing. There's just not enough there. And, you know, even on solar, on wind energy, if we built all of those that are in on the drawing boards to be built within the next 10 years, it would result in something like 15 to 20 million birds a year being killed. Isn't that something? So here now, the people who are looking to preserve the environment are putting up windmills, killing all the birds. Now, the birds are important. We need these birds because the birds eat the bugs, etc. It's part of this whole ecological system that we have. We can't go around killing all the birds. We're doing a good job of that now. We can't accelerate the process. Anyway, so I think they're just too insignificant now. They're just too expensive. And as far as hydrogen cars are concerned, another subject, totally impractical for this point. At this point in time, takes an entire different infrastructure, and we don't have any hydrogen, and we have to produce hydrogen, and we got to use oil to do it. So, as far as coal is concerned, yeah, coal is viable, but it's got to become oil's got to be very expensive to go to coal to clean it properly for us to use it. Now we can only use coal for electricity, which means we have to start driving electric cars. Now you have a match there. Or even better, how about nuclear energy? Now, believe it or not, the United States is the largest country in the world with nuclear energy. Believe it or not, I didn't know that. We have more nuclear energy plants here in the United States. We generate more power from nuclear energy than any place else in the world, including France. Right? Now, just that France is, I think, number two, and they have a larger portion of theirs relative to their economy. They're larger nuclear energy, relatively speaking, but they also import, they use the same amount of fuel that we do. They use the same amount of fossil fuels that we do. So proportionally, we're the same. Actually, we're bigger than nuclear energy, but we should go to nuclear energy. I think it's an excellent source. Now, electric cars. My friends send me stuff on electric cars all the time. They say, here's another electric car. Look at this one. Why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? Now, I tell them, if they come out with an electric car, I'd be the first guy in line. I would buy one. I'd love to have an electric car. All right? This is what happens. Excuse me, I got to take a swig of water. They send me email, and they have this whiz-bang electric car. It works beautifully. It's a beautiful-looking car. It looks great, right? And one thing they leave out is the cost. And I usually go to the website, of the manufacturer, and then you find out. Like the last one was just yesterday. This guy Joe that I know, he sends me this stuff. We call him Joe P because I'm Joe C. He's Joe P. Anyway, he sends it to me, and I go there, and beautiful car. I said, oh, I'm ready to buy this one. Let me find out how much it costs. Well, you had to go through several steps to find out the cost of it. You actually had to go through, you know, I'm willing to buy now type thing. Well, the base price, in other words, the stripped down model with nothing on it was $109,000. And then they had something, plus there was $55,000 for, and I didn't understand it. So it was either $109,000 or $164,000 for the car. Now, folks, let's be honest. How many people in this economy are going to go out and spend $100,000 to $200,000 for an electric car so they can save a few dollars a month on gasoline. Ain't going to happen. The fact is, it's not practical yet. But if we had an electric car that was practical, those batteries got to get really cheap. There's another website where a guy converts like Mustangs to electric cars, and they're only $25,000, but they go for a very short distance. They have regular batteries in them. Now, if you want the lithium, you know, batteries that go for miles and miles and miles, you just add on an additional $35,000. So now you're talking $70,000 for an old Mustang. Folks, and last question he has, he says, which of these energy sources do you think America should pursue and why? I don't think America should pursue anything. Because America is the country. I don't think the government should pursue it. I think the marketplace should pursue it. The marketplace should take its cues from the invisible hand of the economy. The invisible hand of the market will dictate which ones we pursue. If oil all of a sudden goes to $400 a barrel, I can guarantee you all of a sudden we'd be cleaning up these tar sands real quick and we'd be producing it and producing coal, clean coal. But until that time comes, we're just not going to do it. So I don't think America should pursue anything. The marketplace should do it. When it becomes economically and commercially viable, we'll do it, and we'll do it in spades, and we'll be very successful. Wow. I spoke for an hour, and I only received one call, and that's tough on me because I'm getting old, you know, folks. Next Thursday morning, 6:30, I have a live broadcast, and then next Sunday we have Wayne Allen Root. I want you to remind everybody. This is the end of today's broadcast, and we'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, and if you happen to be listening to a rebroadcast or through our archives, you want to call in 918-919-0101. That's our telephone number now. Remember, folks, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. And as Ron Paul has a little sign on his desk which says, "Don't steal, folks. The government hates competition." Until next time, stay well. Stay tuned.